you all know how I, well, you know, the BBC's written down here, struggle with my weight. You all know how I'm very, very fat and how many times I've tried to do something about it. Well, one County Antrim man has been on the same road as me, but he is doing something about it. 47-year-old Paul Houston from Brookshane, just outside Ballymena, has decided enough is enough. He has travelled to Lithuania to have a gastric sleeve operation, and we're going to follow his journey from operation right through the next few months to see what happens to Paul. I was speaking to him yesterday afternoon, just before he was being wheeled into surgery.
I'm in a city called Kaunas, which is about an hour from Vilnius in Lithuania. I'm here to get a gastric sleeve operation performed today, actually.
Is that the gastric band?
No, it's not the gastric band. The gastric sleeve is where they actually cut away about 90% of your stomach. So you are left with a little bit of stomach, but they take the most of it away, Stephen.
And clearly, this is a desperate act. So you must be like me. You must be very fat, and you must be worried about your health and your mortality.
Well, that's it. I mean, it took a few things to happen over the last few months to give me a real impetus to come here and get this done, Stephen, because I was about in around 21.5, 22 stone.
Yep.
High blood pressure, sleep apnea. I didn't have diabetes now, to be lucky. I didn't have that ailment, but it was getting to the stage where I was starting to have trouble just doing the basic things in life. So, yeah, and this was the cheapest option to get it done, because you obviously can't get it done on the NHS in Northern Ireland, so I had to be looking at either coming to England or going abroad to get it done.
And have you always been big?
I played rugby at school and, you know, always liked my food, and it's just been getting worse and worse and worse over the years. I mean, the last 10 years I've probably put on an excess of 4 stone of weight. But it seems as if I've got really bad the last couple of years, Stephen.
And how old are you, Paul?
I'm 47.
Okay. So 22 stone, 47. It's only a matter of time, if you hadn't fixed this, that you're going to keel over. Your body cannot cope with that weight.
Can't cope with it. I mean, my rest and heartbeat, Stephen, at the minute is in around about 100 beats per minute, which is just too fast.
Yeah.
You know, and even with medication for my blood pressure, the CPAP machine for the sleep apnea, you know, it's not curing itself. But I say that I could live with it. It was more, I say, the basic things in life you want to do, I'm just starting to have trouble with.
Like what? What basic things were you not able to do anymore?
I'm nearly embarrassed to say on radio. Do you really want me to say?
Yeah, I do.
Such things, even you go to the toilet and you want to wipe your bum, Stephen, that starts to get difficult. And I'm sure that gets worse as you get bigger. That was one thing in particular, and I mean, that can be embarrassing.
And things like shoelaces, it'll be very difficult to bend down tie your shoelaces.
Do the shoelaces. I mean, you know, you get to the stage where you start to wear slip-on shoes rather than having shoes with laces because of that. But as you say, just even putting socks on, if you drop something on the floor, bend them down to pick stuff up off the floor. I've been lucky, because I'm quite strong, Stephen, I've been lucky that my joints haven't given in. But, eventually what's going to happen is knees and hips and so on are going to start giving you trouble as well.
And how did you, what were you eating? So what's a typical day's diet for you?
I thought I didn't eat too bad. You know, I would have had a normal breakfast, maybe almond, a couple of slices of toast. Then for tea in the middle of the morning, I would have had maybe tea and a biscuit or a bun. Lunchtime, a couple of sandwiches. Afternoon, again, maybe a cup of tea and a couple of buns. But then I come home, and typically I would maybe be eating quite late. But I think the portion sizes, Stephen, what I've learned is they were just too big. And then, of course, you're sitting at home watching TV. You might start snacking on crisps, you know, a bag of prawn cocktails you would like, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, my problem is I'm well past the stage where a bag of prawn cocktail is enough for me. Like, I wouldn't think of eating a bag of crisps anymore. My norm now is 2, 3, 4 bags of crisps.
Yeah, or the share bags, as they call them there.
Yeah, exactly.
Bigger bags, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what can happen, but I mean, before, I'll tell you what I know, Stephen. Before I came in the surgery, they wanted me to lose some weight and cut down on the fatty foods to reduce the size of my liver, because the liver has to be moved slightly to get out of my stomach through the laparoscopic surgery.
Yeah.
And they said that if it's still enlarged and if it's still fatty, then that can be an issue. They might not go ahead with the operation, or the liver could slip from the instrument and then you end up with damage to the liver. And they wanted me to lose some weight. Now, I cut out Cokes, fizzy drinks, sugary sweets, white bread. I ate a little bit of rye bread, which was something that was recommended to me, yogurts and soups, all that sort of stuff. And I actually managed to lose a bit over a stone of weight before I come away, which was just amazing, just cutting those things out, you know?
Yeah. I think you and I can talk to each other pretty brutally and bluntly because we're in a similar place, okay? So I would say this to you, and I hope you don't take any offence at this. You must be in some type of denial if you're saying to me that, you know, you ate pretty reasonably, because you cannot get, it's physically impossible to get to 22 stone without you eating off the scale. So I'm a similar rate, I'm a similar weight, and I'm eating off the scale. So you must be eating, you know, yourself in the oblivion to get the 22 stone.
I wouldn't say it was, Stephen. I wouldn't honestly say it was. Well, but my father quite often said to me, he says, son, you should go on that secret eaters program because, you know, you must be secret eating somewhere and then if you say you're in denial of it. But I would like to say, when I was out in the car and out during work, I would have stopped at a petrol station. And the biggest problem these days is you stop at a petrol station nowadays, they all have deli counters. They all have hot food counters. You know, it's there in front of you. So you go, maybe I'll have a bacon and baguette. I'll eat that, and I'll buy a bottle of Coke with it. And Diet Coke's an even worse thing to drink. So, you know, you're even denying yourself even more if you drink Diet Coke. Maybe I bought a pack of sweets, a pack of jelly babies to eat when I was driving around in the car.
So let's cut.
And maybe that's what I was doing, Stephen. You know,
let's cut to the chase. This is a radical thing you're doing, as you've described yourself. You're getting 90% of your stomach cut away.
Yes.
So that's radical.
It is, but there's a lot of research been done on it, Stephen, and I've been looking into that research. There's been a lot of programs there on television about it recently as well, because they're trying to make a real push for this surgery on the NHS, because when you get it done, when I get that part of my stomach cut away, the biggest thing that's going to happen to me, first of all, is obviously I can't consume as much, I can't put as much in there. But the hormone-producing part of your stomach that makes you hungry, that's taken away. So they say to me that you will no longer see food as something that you enjoy, but food will be more something that you need as fuel. And because it's not reversible, then I'm going to have to be good. Do you understand what I mean?
You've given up trying to do it on your... Look, I'm running around today with a bottle of water because I got up this morning convincing myself that this was day one again for me, which is what I say every day, right?
Yeah.
But you've given up trying to do it yourself, have you? You just cannot do it.
I can't do it, Stephen. I've tried that. I've tried exercise. I've tried all that, and I'm just not the sort of person that can stick at something like that.
So why in Lithuania? Why there? Why not get the operation here in Northern Ireland or at least the UK?
Well, I think my family would rather have stayed in the UK, but, you know, I'm an independent person and decided to do this myself. But they don't offer it on the NHS in Northern Ireland. I went through my GP. I pushed it as far as I could. I even tried to wangle my way into getting it done in Great Britain. But there's so many hurdles they put in your way, it's nearly impossible. And then when I started looking at the price...
What hurdles?
Well, you know, they try and make you diet, they try and make you exercise, they'll put you on Orlistat, which is the fat buster drug, you know, the drug that makes your body stop absorbing fat. And that's really, in Northern Ireland, that's where they stop. If you can't lose your weight past that point, you don't have anywhere else to go. And I think then in the UK, from what I've seen in the programs and so on there, you know, those hurdles are there to start with, and they want you to lose some weight and so on. And it could be maybe 1, 2, 3 years of a wait before you actually get to the point of getting the surgery. I had a colleague actually in Sheffield, a chap that I know in Sheffield, was 35 stone, Stephen. And he got the operation done on the NHS in Sheffield. And he's actually now down to 12 stone. He lost 23 stone with this operation.
He's what, Ben?
He was 35 stone, and he lost 23 stone to getting the gastric sleeve done.
If I wasn't, sitting in the BBC, I'd be swearing. I will use the BBC replacement for me swearing. Wow.
So
12 stone. Like 12. Do you know I would? I think I'm thinking of amounts of money. I think I would pay hundreds of thousands of pounds to be 12 stone. That would be incredible.
Well, Stephen, why don't you think about getting it done? Or have you thought about getting it done? Well, I would have turned the interview on you now.
Well, I'll tell you the reason I swear to you, I'm running around with a bottle of water today, haven't eaten today, got up this morning, said, this is it. Because I'm starting to feel big time. Lots of things I'm starting to feel about the way
I'm right?
But the reason I'm not doing it is because there's something in my brain, something in my personality, whatever it is, which is I want to be able to defeat this myself. And I'm not judging you because you'll probably be more successful than me. But there's just something I keep on thinking, I'll do it.
Can I say something to you, Stephen?
Yeah.
The money's not a problem to you. And again, I'm not meaning that cheaply. The money's not going to be a problem to you. But for me to come here, I mean, do you want me to give you the price of what this is costing here?
Yeah, yeah.
This is costing me £5,600. And that includes my flights from Belfast to Vilnius, my hotels that I need to stay in, my operation, my aftercare, and all my transportation backwards and forwards to the clinics, backwards and forwards to the hotel. Everything is included in that price. And apart from me actually booking the flights, everything else was ready for me. So they were there to collect me at the airport. My hotels were booked. Everything was done for me. I mean, you couldn't ask for better
service. Can I give the counter argument? Because I think look, you're doing what you're doing, and you're saying that you're happy with the safety of it and all of that, and I get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other people would argue that to get that type of significant, and there are dangers with any operation, there are risks with any operation, to get that done in a foreign country, and then after the aftercare stops and you're back home, and then something, and please God, nothing goes wrong, but with any operation there's risks. And then the surgeon that did the operation is not a UK surgeon, is not a surgeon here in Northern Ireland. I'm trying to point out that you've looked at it and it's right for you, but other people listening to this, there are risks associated with getting operations abroad, and you're taking those risks.
Yes. But what I would say to you is, and I mean, I have friends who are doctors, and I've asked them this question. And if I have a complication, if I arrive back in Ballymena next week, and I suddenly have a complication, well, I step into the NHS system then. You know, I go to hospital. It could be bleeding or whatever, you know, the complication is. They're not going to turn me away, Stephen.
What's your dream, Paul?
What's my dream? My dream is to get, well, obviously it's to lose weight. You know, I want to be able to get back on the bicycle again. I want to be able to go out and maybe running again. You know, there's things that I want to do in my career, but my weight's stopping me doing it at the moment.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a civil engineering surveyor.
Okay.
So I'm out and about on my feet all the time, which is probably the only thing that's kept me fit.
And you want to be able to go into a shop, and when you buy clothes, you know, you might not think you're Omar Sharif, but you kind of think, well, that sits on me all right. That's okay. Mm.
I look at myself in photographs when I was in around 20 years of age, and at that time I was probably in around 14 and a half, 15 stone. And I thought, oh, I look thin then, don't I? You know, and I had a nice tan and I had hair then. You know, and I think to myself, it would be nice to be back there. I mean, I'm now on a triple XL shirt. I'm on a 42-inch waist and trousers. And you know yourself, you get the belt on and your belly's actually hanging still even over the top of them, Stephen.
That's right.
I mean, I've had enough of it, so that's why I'm here. It seems drastic, but I say it's putting me in the position where I have to do it. I have no other choice.
And you're not afraid. You're not afraid being out there on your own.
No. I'm here alone by my choice. I couldn't bring anybody with me here to sit and look at my sorry face for a week. you know, with boredom, to be honest. So,
and tell me exactly what they're exactly again what they're going to do in this operation.
Well, what we're going to do is they're going to make 5 or 6 incisions across my stomach, across my belly. Then they're going to insert the instruments in, and they will then staple or create almost looks like a zip. But they create a staple where they actually staple from the top to the bottom of my stomach, leaving basically a tube. So the tube will run from the bottom of my esophagus to my duodenum, where it will then exit out. And then they will then cut away that portion of the stomach and extract that from my body. So all I'll be left with then is basically that tube for a stomach. And that will restrict then the volume of what I can eat. And as I say, it changes your hunger hormones and so on as well. I mean, you have to stick to the diet, Stephen. There's going to be a bit of a diet afterwards. There's foods which, if you put in there, will just clump up and they'll just literally block. And then you enter yourself into discomfort.
So you will never be able to eat a big meal again. You'll never be able to have a big Christmas dinner with piles of roast potatoes and turkey and ham.
No. I said that to my mother before I left. I said, I'm looking forward to Christmas this year because I won't be able to eat the big food. You know? I'll just be looking at probably one roast potato and a slice of turkey. A
couple more questions. Many people would say that when you get to our weight, all right, 21 stone, whatever, that there's a psychological reason why you're eating that amount of food. And that if you're cutting out your physical ability to eat, you've got to also sort out your head. Have you thought that through? What was causing you to eat so much? And whether you're going to also try to mend yourself that way, if there is something to sort.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in my own mind that my mindset has changed now the last few months. Especially since I got to the point where, right, I'm picking the surgery and I'm going. You know, I've been through a divorce, Stephen. You know, the last 5 years have been pretty bad that way. You know, I wasn't always happy. I had my own business for quite a while. You know, that had given bad times, might have been part of the problem.
Yeah.
I just don't know. But I would say I wasn't happy. I wasn't totally happy with myself. You know, so there had to be something there. And I think as well, when you have the money in your pocket and the food's readily available, it is there. It's the comfort, you know. That's what it is.
What you're actually looking at here is you're looking at, it sounds to me like what you're looking for is a new you and a line drawn under things so that you're starting again. You want to get to that point where you've got a new body, you're physically fit, you've cleared your head, and you're starting again. And you want to just grab on the happiness, both physical and emotional happiness.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And the weight's the big thing of it, Stephen. The weight has been the last 2-3 years, the weight has really started to get me down, you know. I was always a big lad, you know. So I played rugby, played sports, was always a big lad, but I just can't carry that anymore, you know. I'm getting to the edge now with the body saying, Paul, you've got to wise up. The next thing around the corner for me is probably diabetes or a heart attack, someone will take.
If you don't mind, I would love to, I was going to say follow your journey. I will punch myself 100 times if I ever use a phrase like that. I would like to keep in contact with you during this show. Maybe over the weeks and months we can talk. Would that be all right?
That's fine, Stephen, yeah. There's no problem at all.
That'd be great. How many hours until you get the operation?
Well, I'm due to go under the knife at 6 o'clock local time here, so we're 2 hours ahead, so about 4 p.m. today.
So you're a few hours from your life-changing operation, Paul.
Yeah, I'm sitting in a lovely room here, TV and lovely lower sofas, and there's the bed, the execution bed, as I'll probably look at it, and we'll probably come and look after me in the next couple of hours, get me ready, get me prepped up.
Have you got a phone with you? Clearly you do, you're on one. Have you got a mobile phone with you?
just on the mobile here.
Are
now,
you?
Yeah.
Would you do us a favour? Yeah, I mean, take a picture of yourself and send it to us.
Sure. Because
I want to, with your permission, obviously, I'd love to put that on our Twitter feed and say, look, here's Paul, a couple of hours before the operation, and then let's see you in a couple of months' time.
Yep, certainly, Stephen, no problem.
Brilliant. Listen, all the best, and it's a personal story. So thank you for sharing it. And it's a story that obviously is thought-provoking for lots of people, including me.
Yes. I would like to see, I mean, obviously, you know, I've followed you for a long time, Stephen, and I've been to your TV shows and so on, and I've seen you doing the ups and downs as well. And until somebody actually tugs at the proper string in your heart, Stephen, you're going to have to sort something else too.
I think that's fair. I hope you think that's me being kind to you.
Well,
absolutely. Look, I think that's fair. That's a fair comment. Paul, thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
Okay. All the best.
Right, so you can see Paul on our Twitter feed at Stephen Nolan, on our Facebook page, The Real Stephen Nolan on Facebook. And also he's recorded a short video for us, because we recorded that yesterday afternoon. He was getting into surgery about 2 hours later. And Paul has recorded a video for us having left surgery. So you can find that on our Facebook and Twitter pages, at Stephen Nolan on Twitter, The Real Stephen Nolan on Facebook. And you're reacting to this morning, 030 30 80 55 55. Obesity is such a huge subject now throughout Europe and the Western world, as you know, and I guess a big subject for some of us here in Northern Ireland. Warren and Bangor. Morning, Warren.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Doing okay. You say you're embarrassed. Why?
Okay, I was embarrassed. Just listening to Paul talking there, and you know, it reminded me about my own sort of travel with the weight problem. I've always been a big person as well, and tried everything. I was always in the martial arts. I was always in the training. Just could not get my weight off at all. And I was saying the gentleman speaking down the phone there 2 years ago. One of my friends pestered me. Until I went down to Slimming World one night. And in my mind, I was always, and I've always been around sort of 19 to 20, 21 stone at the most. And that first night, Stephen, I got on the scales and I weighed 26 and a half stone. And I nearly had a wee mess. And since then...
How old were you then?
I was, it took years, 51.
Okay, that's really dangerous, isn't it?
Really dangerous, mate. Mm-hmm. And I was wearing size 56 trousers, and over the past just under 2 years now, about 98% of it has, and I'll hold my hands up, has been totally due to Slimming World and the help and all I've got there, and they just changed my whole lifestyle, my whole food concept.
So a year and a half later, what weight are you now?
10 and a half stone off.
Wow.
So I have, still a while to go, you know, still myself, I have another sort of just over stone.
Listen, like 10 and a half stone, your life must be transformed.
It is, mate. It's transformed 100%. So it has, from everything, like, okay, I'm going to buy a pair of trousers now, about 5 or 6 weeks later, I'm going to have to buy another pair of trousers and another shirt.
Brilliant.
I was at an interview there a couple of weeks ago, and I actually put my shirt on and haven't worn for a while, and I couldn't even wear it. It was so baggy on me.
Brilliant.
And I was, me and the friend went over to Amsterdam there a couple of months ago, and I was able to sit in the plane and not use an extension seatbelt, which I've never done.
Yeah. Brilliant. Listen, thank you for telling us your story today. Jim in West Belfast. Morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen, I just know that guy talking there. And
I'm just reading the notes here, because I get a little, you know, a little header from what each caller's going to say. Mr. Tumble gets on my wick. Is what you told the phone in room. Mr. Tumble.
And there you go again. See, I imagine now you're making a bit of a laugh out of this here, because you don't want me making the comments I'm going to make.
Well, no, so sorry. Did you say Mr. Tumble gets on my wick?
Obviously, someone wrong with your hearing. I've already said yes, I did.
Right.
You get on my wick. If you zip that motor mouth of yours up and let me talk, I'll explain to you why. You have the biggest show in the country. 5 mornings a week, 9 to 10:30, a massive, humongous platform. And yet I find you make a mockery out of food, out of eating your crisps, out of eating your turkey slates, about gorging on food at 3 and 4 in the morning or when you finish 5 live. And as much as you probably use out there some sort of mask to hide, that anybody who gets to the point where they're morbidly obese, a poor guy there has been in for surgery, there has to be some underlying issues that stem back into their life that would suggest they use food as a comfort, as a tool to get over some sort of emotional stress in their life. And as much as that guy's going to look fantastic, he's going to lose all that weight, he's going to be amazing, what's happening, the problem is between his ears, what's going on in his head, is thinking. And I find you indicative of that whole issue. You have the biggest show. You're a very successful man, and you have you've done really well for yourself. But yet you have every tool available to you to get the weight off, and you don't. A few years ago, you went to train for the marathon, and you lost it about two running sessions all over. I think your show could be a massive platform. You can get the sponsors. You've got Twitter followers. You can get people on board. Stephen Nolan, Weight Loss Club, whatever. You don't realize how massive an influence your show could have in people's lives who have trouble with their weight. But yet you get on, you make a bit of a joke out of it.
I think everything you've said so far is fair.
And I'll go as far to say, I also said to your researcher, I think you personally as an individual, none of my business, but I think you used food as some sort of emotional crutch. If you look back into your life, into anybody's life who has issues, there's stuff going on and they use a certain tool as a comfort. And I think you use food as a comfort because I don't think you're happy being overweight. I don't think you're happy within yourself.
Well, of course I'm not. Of course I'm not happy being fat, for goodness sake, Jim. Hold on.
I am not so cross as to say you're happy being fat because it's not fair to just say somebody's fat. You are overweight, but you're overweight for a reason. You use food as a comfort, as a crutch, as an emotional crutch for stuff going on in your life that none of us know nothing about, and that's your business. But that needs to be addressed by a lot of people.
Well, so everything I think you've said so far is fair, all right? The reason that this show cannot be an influence on other people, there's a fundamental reason why it can't be a good influence on other people. Because you're right, we've got a massive platform, it's very powerful. Here's why it can't be, Jim, because I can't crack it. So if I can't crack it, there's no positive influence, is there?
You're talking rot's nonsense.
I can't. I've been trying to crack it since I was...
Hold on a second.
I let you talk. I did let you talk.
It's like an alcoholic going to AA. The poor alcoholic goes to AA. They can't crack it. It's when they get into an environment of other like-minded people who give each other moral and emotional support, then the penny finally drops. Yes, you can't crack it. But see, you're so aloof in fantasy island and your bubble of... pontification and financial satisfaction.
Wise up.
You wouldn't. No, it's a real. You get an alcoholic and put them in the AA. When they get the support of other like-minded people, they will get it. And if they don't get it straight away, they will get to the point where they have an emotional network around them.
I've been trying to be skinny, you know, normal, call it whatever you want in terms of weight, since I was 11 years of age.
And what's the cause? Let me ask you, 30 odd years later. 30 odd years. And what is the cause that you
I can't stop eating bad food.
Why?
I don't know.
That's ridiculous. That's a totally ridiculous statement. There has to be a reason why. Do you eat when you're sad? Do you eat when you're happy?
I eat when I'm happy. I eat when I'm sad. I eat when I'm frustrated. I eat when I'm excited. I'm not being glib about this.
My next thing to you would be, doesn't make the point, and there's no shame in it here, go and speak to somebody. Go and ask somebody, a professional, a psychologist, whatever, a healthcare professional, what is wrong in my head that I feel when I am happy, sad, depressed, up, down, left or right, that I eat? Because you're a young man, you know, you're still got your mother here. I saw you in town the other day. You're carrying a bit of a big fella. And as much as you get in the majority of the people in this country's work, I wouldn't want to see anything happen to you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
No, take a tongue in cheek. Do we get in there? Overwhelmed, you know what I mean?
No, I'm not. That's as much of a compliment as I'm going to get.
All you want to get from me. But my point is that you need to look at the deeper issues. That guy's going to lose that weight. He's going to get his operation, get his band in, and he's going to look fantastic in a year's time. And you'll follow him on Twitter and you'll update all his posts. But what I would say is the biggest problem is not that guy shoveling the food into his mouth. It's what's going on between his ears. And you and a lot of other people in the same boat. I'm very lucky. I haven't never suffered that... affliction, and God help people who are, because it is a pretty tough thing to live with.
Okay.
But I just think that what's going on between the years is probably as significant as to what you're putting in your mouth.
Good call today, Jim. Thank you very much indeed.